This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 603, I think. Oh, man. Last Friday, Lynette's nephew and wife and son came up to stay with Nana and see great-grandma. No, grandma. To see grandma and see how she was doing and spend a little time with her. And so I was over there and we were chatting about this, that, and the other. And I know what it was. I mentioned something about, yeah, I got to go home, record the podcast, upload the podcast, something. And he said, I didn't know you did a podcast. I said, yeah, it's like episode 602. He looked at me and I said, I've been doing it for 11 years, man. I just don't know when to quit. That's my problem. I don't know when to quit. So it just makes me laugh every time I announce episodes in the hundreds. Ridiculous. Anyways, it's been a good week. All is well. We're pottering along. Our little costume swap day was fun last week. People seemed to enjoy that, laughed. I had some people told me it was the best one yet. So I don't know if I'll get quite that reaction this week, because this week is just a day that I'm going to talk about a little bit and compliment some people, and that's going to be it. But this week is the sweetest day, and Hallmark actually sells sweetest day cards. So I mean, this is getting close to something that normal people might recognize. I noticed several weeks back when I was in Walmart in the section for greeting cards in there. There was actually a sweetest day section. So I was like, wow, there you go. So anyways, that's tomorrow. This should be fun. It should be fine. I don't think I'll get mugged over this one. If I didn't get mugged over the Mother's Day costume, I don't think I'll get mugged over this one. Although it is turning cold tomorrow. Our high yesterday was, I think it was in the 80s, and it's like afternoon and it's in the 50s here now. And tomorrow morning when I'm supposedly going in to get breakfast with a friend and going to Walmart, it's going to be in the 30s. But I'm always under multiple layers of these costumes, so, you know, I think I'll be okay. It's just like, whoa, hey, what just happened here? Oh, man, it's interesting. It's all very, very interesting. So, anyways, that's good. Work was good. Got plenty of stuff done. Not quite as much as I wanted, but that's good. Writing is good. We're puttering along. Getting the stuff done that needs to get done. And costumes are good. I'm right now working on the Halloween costume, because I need to support it a little more. It's just, the costume's good by itself, but I'm tall enough that it doesn't quite get all the way up for where I want it to be. Because it's one of those inflatable costumes. And so I don't know if I need a little stronger fan in the thing. I mean, it inflates and stays inflated, but it's just not, the window's in the wrong place, you can't see, and there is room for it to go up a little higher. So I'm building something to push it up and support it a little more, and I've got one solution that's possible, but I think I've come up with another way to do that. I'm going to try to get that done this weekend. I'm 2 weeks out from Halloween, so obviously I've got plenty of time, but it'd be nice to get that done this weekend so I can get on to the next thing. Because I don't quite have, I've got to make sure I've got the first week of November, I've got to make sure that costume's all ready to go, get that, and the second week is World Kindness Day, and I think I'm close on World Kindness Day, but I've got a couple of little extra things to take care of for that. So planning ahead. My nephew's wife asked me on Friday, she said, so how far do you plan ahead? And I said, well, I have the days figured out, I think through February. And she went, oh, wow. I said, yeah, it was February. I said, I'm not ready that far out in advance, but at least I know where I'm going. And then I have to, you know, build some things out. And so I did go ahead and order a costume for National Monkey Day. But I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. I ordered it because it was the only thing I could find, and it was from China, and it was going to take a while to get here. And then I think I found the same costume on Amazon for more money, significantly more money. And then they had a size chart with it, and I was looking at the size chart, and I was like, this is not going to work. But, hey, you know, sometimes that happens. It was the best Monkey Day costume I could find. It was really cute. I'm going to have to build like a belt of bananas. So I'm looking to see how I'm going to do that. But anyway, so that's all as well. Like I said, writing is good. Family is good. All is well. My mother-in-law did fall down a couple of weeks ago now and break her knee. And so my beloved has been staying with her. But we've got a ramp out at the house. We got a ramp. That I bought a portable ramp, and so tonight Lynette is going to try to move her mom back out to our house so that she can get her work done at the house, but then also be able to watch over her mom. And so I think that's all going to happen tonight. We're going to try to get that to happen tonight. We'll see, but I think it'll happen tonight. So that's that. Lots of goings on in the country. Lots of hollering and shaking a fist and rah, 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 rah. Lots of going on in the country. But you know what? There's plenty of people talking about all that stuff and plenty of people promoting us versus them and all that stuff. So we're just going to talk about something else. Oh, I did get to see Mars and Saturn for real this week. That was fun. One of my buddies actually has is a professor at Drury College here, and they had a telescope that they needed a place to set up, and he lives a little farther out of town, and things are a little darker there, and so he's set up a platform and set up, you know, a little shed with a little slide-back roof that takes care of all that stuff, and so they have a little telescope out there, and he was showing some things to some people, and so they were looking at a couple of planets, and it was fun. I went out there about 10 o'clock in the evening and looked through the eyepiece, and I said, looks just like the pictures. So it was fun. Amazing stuff. And when they were talking about photons and how amazing photons are, that we're looking at these stars in the skies, and those photons have traveled hundreds or thousands of thousands of light years to get to us, and yet we can still see them, which is just incredible. And we were looking at Mars, and you could kind of see the little polar ice caps there, and he said, you know what's amazing is the photons bounced off that polar ice cap and are entering into our eyes, which is amazing. It's, thank God we have eyes. Thank God we have, that can see, ears that can hear. Wow, how glorious. Noses that could smell this time of year. Noses can smell as we are going home. There's a farm that is about a half a mile north of us, and Every year they put manure down. Somebody puts manure down. And there's about a week in here where things are a little ripe. They're just a little ripe. So we're in that week now. Anyways, So, you know, it's funny because you'll get home and you're like, what is that smell? Oh, yeah, it's manure time. Part of the joys of living in the country. Wouldn't trade it for anything, though. I'll tell you, would not trade it for anything. I love living where we live. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. And just calm, peaceful. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. So, anyways. Because I'm driving out of my driveway. I came across this article that I thought, well, this is very interesting and perhaps apropos to many things that are going on. So the title of the article is The Human Error Darwin Inspired. Okay? So the idea here is that, you know, since 1859, when Darwin's On the Origin of the Species was published, this publication of this, according to this article, dealt a blow to the hubris of Homo sapiens. We aren't God's final and most perfect creations, after all, but merely one more product of the same evolutionary process that gave rise to the apes, lampreys, and limpets. One moment, I'm getting my mail. So the idea of the article is that, well, see, we're all just rubbing around in the mud and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we're all just so happy. We're so happy to know that we are this. But we got a little problem now, because this inspired some people to take that to its logical conclusion. And maybe we don't necessarily like that logical conclusion. So he goes through a bunch of different stuff. He says, if the idea that Darwin humbled us has become canonical, what is less often observed is the fact that the newfound humility was in certain important respects misleading and dangerously slow. So, in the latter half of the 19th century, when small-scale artisanal methods were giving way to larger-scale industrialization in many areas of resource extraction and use, Homo sapiens were not, in fact, just another species, an organism like any other. To the contrary, Homo sapiens were just embarking on a period of more sudden environmental transformation than any single species had ever achieved. Homo sapiens was in fact quite special. Oh, now we're not just normal. Now we're not just grinding it out in the mud. Now we're special. Okay, so it was a consequential error to think otherwise. In one important area of resource extraction, marine fisheries, we can trace the ramifications of Darwinian humility as it blinded powerful people to the unique and cataclysmic scale of their ecological impact. Okay, so he says here, Henry Huxley was a dear friend of Darwin's, a truly great zoologist in his own right, and the most important popular spokesman on behalf of Darwin's idea. Just for the record, the author says, since I am about to indict him, he is among my heroes. Okay, so the article goes on to say, from innumerable passages in Huxley's published writings and public speeches, which were transcribed and sold as pirated pamphlets by enterprising members of the crowd, it is clear that he viewed Darwin's theory as a broad argument against human pomposity, in favor of greater modesty. The very title of Huxley's magnum opus, published 4 years after Origins, points to a new perspective on the position of Homo sapiens in relation to the rest of the world. The book is called Man's Place in Nature. It is rare that a preposition is the most loaded, meaningful word in a book's title, i.e. in nature. So Huxley's inclination, quite rightly so, if evolution is true and atheism is true, I might add, Huxley's fateful inclination was to view human beings as he would any other species. Well, So, Huxley wrote, "Perhaps no other mammals present us with so extraordinary a series of gradations as this, leading us to insensibly from the crown and summit of the animal creation down to creatures from which there is but a step, as it seems, to the lowest and smallest and least intelligent of the placental mammalia. It is as if nature herself has foreseen the arrogance of man, and with Roman severity has provided that his intellect, by its very triumphs, should call into prominence the slaves, admonishing the conqueror that he is but dust." Okay, so anyways. Okay, in the year those books were published, those words were published, Huxley was appointed by the British government to be one of three royal commissioners investigating the state of marine fisheries. The commission had been formed to resolve a dispute among the artisanal fishermen who used hooks and lines and crab pots, and trawlermen who sailed larger ships towing a net like a wide gullet, the lower jaw of which was a weighted cable that dragged along the sea floor. Over two previous decades, the British trawling fleet had quadrupled in size, and artisanal fishermen thought that the trawlers were not only extracting inordinate volumes of valuable fish, but also degrading the sea floor, quote, garden or forest, quote, that those fish relied on as habitat. Ship captains had been threatened and their nets set ablaze. Okay, so, and people testified and said, look, before the trawlers got here, you know, the ground abounded with small shellfish. Now the ground is cleaned of this sort of by trawling, and now we have no large fish because all their food is taken away. Okay, in both inquiries, Huxley's fateful inclination was to view humans as he would any other species. So he saw that it's just as the way you would view natural population dynamics. As a prey species becomes scarce, the intensity of predation follows in decline. Elegantly, each regulates the other, and they may oscillate stably around an equilibrium. Huxley simply applied this insight to humans. Quote, "Any tendency to overfishing," he wrote, "will meet with its natural check in the diminution of the supply. This check will always come into operation long before anything like permanent exhaustion has occurred." Yeah. That phrase, natural check, is the one that Darwin had borrowed from Thomas Malthus, who had been thinking about human populations. Now Huxley was borrowing it back, taking ecological insights about other species and applying them to humans. Oh, okay. Huxley influenced both final reports. His understanding of natural population regulation, for example, is reflected in the 1863 report. Quote, "If any trawling ground be overfished, the trawlers themselves will be the first persons to feel the evil effects of their own acts. Fish will become scarcer, and the produce of a long day's work will diminish until it is no longer remunerative. When this takes place, and it will take place long before the extinction of fish, trawling in this locality will cease, and the fish will be left undisturbed until their great powers of multiplication have made good their losses, and the ground again becomes profitable for the trawlers." And then comes the recommendation of the commission. Quote, "We advise that all acts of Parliament which profess to regulate or restrict the modes of fishing in the open sea be repealed, that unrestricted freedom of fishing be permitted thereafter." Yeah. There's a little problem. We'll get to it in a minute. Yeah. So they go on to say, you know, what the problems are, et cetera, et cetera. the cod cannot reproduce themselves as fast as we can fish it out. Why? Well, they don't say this, but why? Because we can develop technologies that can just lay waste to stuff really quickly. So they said by the end of the century, it was undeniable. The effort required to catch a certain quantity of fish had multiplied many times. Every accessible square meter of the North Sea was being hit approximately twice a year by a trawl. Unlike the species he was fishing for, Homo sapiens had driven his prey so hard that, contrary to Huxley's humbled intuition, they would never bounce back. The ecosystem had been permanently transformed by one species alone. That's because we're special. And we'll get to why we're special in a moment. Sometimes we're not so special that we're special. So, the article goes on to say, there is an inescapable and sad irony here. In its concept of humanity's relationship to other species, the biblical account of the natural world, which Huxley had spent his career refuting and replacing with the new theory offered by Darwin, was in fact closer to reflecting accurately the new reality of industrialized civilization. According to Genesis, man held dominion over the rest of creation. He was not just another species. He was distinctly more godlike. Under that view, it would not have been hard to imagine that humanity would one day even bring Leviathan to his knees, be they figurative or vestigial. It might have been wise for Huxley to hold on to one particular element of the biblical account, its recognition of human domination, of human dominion. And so he goes on by saying, you know, Huxley should have done this, Huxley should have done that. Perhaps, and he ends up with it, perhaps if Huxley had taken his humbling of man farther, he would have seen that evolutionary supersizing of certain encephalic structures, whether antlers or brains, might prove dangerous in the long run. Because he talks about earlier in the article a certain type of elk, I think it is, that whose horns get so big that they can't survive. Interesting stuff here. So there's just a couple of problems here. First of all, he does in the article recognize that the fitting of our experience in this world would be better if we thought ourselves closer akin to the biblical account than to the theory of evolution. If we believed that we were given stewardship over this earth and that it was our job to have dominion, and in having dominion to take care of the earth, we would be better fitted to this earth than if we just believed we were just more mud and we were just another species and we should just take everything we should get. So from a theory standpoint, it's more practical for us to believe the biblical account. It's more practical as the working theory that man has dominion over the earth. It's more practical for us to believe that than it is for us to believe the theory of evolution, because we miss the fact that, yes, we are clever, and we aren't like other species, and we can invent stuff that then will just override and overrun the earth. Yes, we can do that. The second problem is that we are not like other species that run on instinct, that when supply goes down, we don't have as many kids, you know, we don't reproduce as much, populations goes down because there's not enough food. We are more clever than that. We figure out other ways to get more resources and pull them out. And unfortunately, the fact of the matter is, we do not do this judiciously, because there is a force for destruction within us. And this is what differentiates us from the animals as well. Not only are we more clever, not only do we have the capability to wreak great swaths of destruction, but we are inclined to do so. When you see things like the great deleveraging of 2008, and you realize all the supposedly smartest financial people in the world created instruments that simply by examining them, the smartest guys about finance in the world should have been able to see, probably were able to see, that this would be financial ruin, that they intentionally overrated instruments that they had put together to make people think they were safe just to skim more money from them, knowing that they were probably putting the economy at risk, and yet they did it anyways. They did it anyways. Because it is our inclination from our flesh to destroy. That is our inclination. And what the concept of a God does, as I've mentioned before, what the concept of a God does is it puts above us some awareness that we think, oh, maybe I should pay attention to what I'm doing because someone may hold me to account for this. And the problem with atheism, the problem with evolution, is it takes all of that stuff away. And it just sets us loose to do whatever we can do. And guess what? We lay waste and we just wreak our destruction everywhere. Because if atheism is true and evolution is true, we're not stewards. There's just a whole bunch of resources out there that we deserve to prey on. We have a right to prey on, just like everybody else. And even that wouldn't be that bad, I suppose, if we had some sense of survival, if we had deep within us some sense of, I don't want to do all this because maybe that'll come back to bite me sometime in the future. But at our base, at the battle we fight, if we are not living in the spirit to keep the flesh under control, there is no governor, there is no regulator to say, you know, maybe I should just stop and pull back a little bit because maybe it wouldn't be good if I just completely overfished and destroyed this. Instead, what the flesh tells us is, oh, no, you can go ahead and keep doing that. Just keep going and doing it because, you know, you're just going to get all the stuff you need. And then once you destroy everything, you can just go someplace else and restart. And, you know, there'll be some suckers that are left holding the bag, but you don't really care about that. Because that's the flesh. That's scorched earth. That's why we see what we see when we look around and it manifests itself everywhere. Government, business, entertainment, religion, it's everywhere. There's destruction everywhere. And it's the flesh. And the only solution to it is life in the spirit. And I think the only way you can get yourself empowered enough to live life in the spirit is with the help of the Holy Spirit and Jesus. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.